Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show quarterly market update episode for this, the second quarter of 2018. I'm here with our resident expert economist and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, founder of Green Drake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. On today's quarterly market update episode, Paul fills us in on the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces might be expected to do to the local real estate investment markets in the short and long term. About two-thirds of the way through this episode, Paul shares some interesting and surprisingly positive impacts we might expect from the tax cuts which recently took effect, coupled with the current trade war currently being waged by Washington. And of course, we're going to talk about how this all ties into your real estate investments as well. So shall we jump right in? Okay, welcome back to the REI Diamond Show, Mr. Paul Sloat. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dan?
Doing fantastic. It is April 18th, 2018, here in Chicago. We just can't seem to turn the corner to spring. The weather's stuck in the 40s and 50s, and we're expecting snow tonight. And I think you're in Philadelphia. Have you guys fared much better there, Paul?
No, it's been pretty chilly. We had frost last night. However, according to the weatherman, true spring should arrive next week.
So All right, well.
It's supposed to be in the 60s, but it'll be the first time it's been like that. And we get nice, consistently warm weather in quite some time. We've gotten these teasers where we get a day that's warm and then it gets cold again.
Well, good. I don't feel as bad knowing that it's not local to the Chicago market. Let's jump right in. I'll turn over the floor to you, and you can kind of bring us up to speed on this second quarterly market update here as to what's going on in the economy. Sound good?
Sounds good, Dan. Well, for those who are investors, it's been a wild ride in the first quarter with the stock market going all over the place, but eventually ending up little changed. And for those who have not experienced that, that is not abnormal for the stock market. So we expect more of the same, of a lot of volatility, but maybe not much progress in the markets. And the reason we expect not much progress in the markets is a function of two things. The first thing is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has begun to raise interest rates at a more rapid pace. And this more rapid pace will eventually slow the economy. And in fact, what you have is the yield curve is beginning to flatten, which is a indication that the bond market is beginning to expect the Federal Reserve's efforts to have an impact on the real economy. The other thing that's going on with the Federal Reserve is, as we know, they have ended quantitative easing, but not only have they ended quantitative easing, they are pulling money out of the economy. And this is beginning to put pressure on liquidity. And the reason it's beginning to put pressure on liquidity is we're seeing a lower supply of money into the economy just when the economy is accelerating. And that is part two of why the stock market may not go that far this year and may have a lot of volatility. The economy is accelerating. Since Donald Trump has been elected president, the economy has grown at a 3% rate or better. Unlike with Mr. Obama, where we grew at a 2 to 2.25% rate on average. That is a big difference in how the economy grows. And with the first quarter, which is usually the weakest quarter of the year, And we suspect this is because the government bean counters have not gotten their seasonal adjustment properly done. The expectation is the U.S. economy will grow 2.5% in the first quarter. Now, if that is the weakest quarter of the year, it is easy to imagine a 3.5%, if not better, growth quarter. And we have seen lots of pieces of data that would support that, such as strong train volumes, strong airline volumes, strong trucking volumes, strong profitability in the chemical sector, strong sales across numerous products to the consumer, including a very strong print in auto sales. So we suspect that growth this year will be relatively strong. And given where we are in the economy, that means that things are relatively tight. Unemployment is low and wages have started to creep up. Materials that go into real estate are creeping up even faster, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But as we look at things, we see pressure on costs throughout corporate America that will likely offset much of the good news from faster top line. And so for the stock market, having run up 20% last year, we think we got 2 years worth of stock market in one. So for the markets, it might be a bumpy ride this year with little progress. For the bond markets, it's going to be keep an eye on the Fed, because the Federal Reserve is going to be the arbiter of the business cycle. And for the real estate investor, it's going to be keep an eye on the sector of real estate in which we're involved, and keep another eye on the Fed. So let's talk about a little about some of the sectors in real estate. As you know, we have been positive on single-family housing for a very long time, and we continue to be positive on single-family housing. We are not producing enough units. However, each year, the number of single-family housing starts has been rising. This year, we expect them to rise 7 to 10%. And we think that total housing starts are approaching what we call equilibrium if we included multifamily starts. Now, we consider equilibrium, we're producing enough housing units in this country to be somewhere around 1.5 to 1.6 million units. Well, that's because we generally need 1.2 million and we generally destroy another 300,000. Either they're obsoleted or they're involved in a fire or some form of natural disaster. Just think about Houston last year and the flooding that would require the reconstruction of numerous homes down there. So when we look at things, we're still positive on single family homes, especially because demographics are moving in favor of single-family home ownership. Home ownership has bottomed and is creeping up. The millennials are buying houses, as we pointed out last time, and we expect to continue for quite some time as they are moving into their prime home buying years. In addition, we're not really constructing enough starter homes for these millennials, so there is pressure on the bottom. Unfortunately, with the baby boomers retiring, we are selling a lot of very large houses which the millennials cannot afford yet. They'll be able to buy those houses in about 5 years, but not today. So we are positive on single family housing. On the flip side, we are somewhat neutral to negative on multifamily housing. Now, that doesn't mean you can't own a single-family home and rent it out, but we're negative on multifamily housing because of the basics of supply and demand. We're building lots of multifamily units, and the demand for multifamily is declining. According to the latest data from the Census Bureau, we've had negative growth in households living in rental units. And we expect this to get worse before it gets better because the millennials, which moved into apartments in a big way in the last 5 to 8 years, are now moving out of apartments and into single-family homes. And there is no one to fill the void. So while we have not turned super negative on multifamily housing, we think that there is an issue because we have supply against shrinking demand. And usually for any commodity product, when there is declining demand and increasing supply, it doesn't give you a good result. So unless there is some disaster in the economy that would plunge us into a recession and cause a lot of people to lose jobs, we would expect multifamily to come under increasing amounts of pressure and single family to continue to be in a good position. In a number of other classes of real estate, we are either positive or neutral or in some cases negative, and we have not really changed our viewpoint from last quarter. So we will run through a few of the other classes where there is positives, and then we'll talk about a couple where we might want to watch out. So one where we continue to be positive is on warehouse space and industrial space. Warehouses, because more and more of the goods in the country are being sold over the internet, and we need more and more warehouse space to handle that. If we talk about industrial space, the industrial economy is growing here, and part of the United States economic strategy that is emerging is a reindustrialization of America. And therefore, we will see more manufacturing and more need for industrial space, both heavy and light industrial. So we expect that to do well over time, except for a recessionary period, it should be a good place to be. If we look at malls, we continue to be negative on malls for obvious reasons. And if we look at some other areas like self-storage, while we do think the amount of self-storage will continue to grow and demand for self-storage will continue to grow as well, the amount of space being built in self-storage has kind of gone through the roof. We are now building in square footage terms 2 times as much square footage as we built at the peak of the last recovery. Given that, we would expect pressure on self-storage to accelerate. And so while NOI ended up somewhere between 4 to 4.5% on a same-store basis in 2017, is expected to slow to 1 to 3% this year. Now, that may end up being an optimistic outcome, because a lot of space is going to start coming on in the second half of the year and begin to put pressure on rent. And it will probably mean that 2019, even without a recession, might see negative NOI growth for this asset class. Were we to have a recession on top of the amount of supply coming on, it appears there would be a fairly negative result because in recessions, capacity utilization drops for this class of real estate, and we are adding supply, significant supply. So for this piece, part of the real estate market, we would say be careful because the fundamentals are deteriorating. If we're to look at some other areas, such as data continues to be good as data and server farms grow. Another area that is okay for now is hotels. We are bringing supply on in hotels. However, with faster economic growth, demand for hotel rooms is keeping up with supply. The real issue will come in a recession, because typically what will happen with that asset class is that the hotels under construction won't stop in the midst of construction. They will continue being built. And that means that supply will come on during the recession as demand is dropping. And that led to a very poor result the last two recessions. So we think that hotel is okay until we hit a recession, at which point it will have some significant difficulties. If we were to look outside of the real estate area as to what we see going on in the economy, we see strong growth. We know there's been a lot of noise on trade, and lots of newspapers are saying this trade noise will be negative for economic growth. Our analysis says maybe, maybe not. And the reason our analysis says maybe not is because the U.S. produces less than half of the goods it consumes. If the U.S. were to produce a larger percent of goods, it would be an unmitigated positive for the economy in two ways. Number one, it would cut our trade deficit. And number two, it would increase productivity growth, which means long-term economic growth in the United States could sustain at much higher levels. So we are not as dire on a trade war with China, especially with China, because China's been conducting a trade war on the United States for the last decade or so, and we just haven't retaliated. So I think there is, for the United States, a lot to gain and very little to lose, which is the exact opposite of what you read in the newspapers. But time will tell. And the other thing we will tell our viewers is that even though every newspaper tells you free trade is a good thing, when you read any kind of intermediate or advanced economics text, what it tells you is that the outcome of free trade is uncertain. It could be good or it could be bad, which is not what you're being told in the newspapers. So we have a kind of different viewpoint here based on the actual facts. The other thing we would point out about the economy at large is we've had a massive underinvestment in infrastructure, and we're going to have to spend more money. And we would expect that to, by the way, siphon off some of the construction workers working on projects in other parts of the commercial construction area, as that is higher paying work. So when it happens, and we don't think it's an if, we think this is a when it happens, we think it will put further pressure on skilled labor, where rates are already going up 4% to 6% per year for that skilled labor, and may grow up at a faster rate because of the pressure being put on by a ramp in infrastructure spending. So that's just something to keep an eye on. And the other thing, reason to keep an eye on it, is that if infrastructure spending does ramp up, as it should, what will happen is demand for basic things like cement and rebar will go up significantly. And if that goes up significantly, it's going to put cost pressure on the material side of building commercial buildings. So we think it'll be a positive for the country as a whole, because we have underinvested in infrastructure. We need to do this. We think it'll be a positive for productivity. However, there is no free lunch, and the negative will be that costs will rise in order to meet the demand for this product. So when we look at things, those are the simple things. What's going to happen with China is a little unclear. We think the likely course with China is that we'll get some kind of agreement. The Chinese will violate it, and then things will get a little bit uglier. And we are not surprised because China has basically agreed to many things over the past decade and done none of the things it agreed to do. So why should it be different this time? So we expect that China will be a short-term positive but a medium to long-term negative for the markets, but a short-term negative and a long-term positive for the U.S. economy as the United States levels the playing field and forces production back to the U.S., which will increase our growth rate and obviously address the massive trade deficit the United States possesses. And I think that is a pretty quick overview of what we see going on in the world today. Questions, Dan?
All right. I do have something written down here, Paul. The first I want to talk about a little bit, I'm following the trade talks in the media. I'm sure a lot of people are who are paying attention and trying to figure out, you know, what's going to be what. In the example that you're talking about where the United States begins ramping up production of its own goods here, who in theory would be the one to benefit and build these goods? I mean, who are going to be the businesses leading this? Are we just expecting spontaneous entrepreneurship to grow up and start to serve these? Or who are the obvious players in this game?
Okay. So here are the obvious players. The obvious players are going to be your domestic, right, steel companies, right? The obvious players are going to be the existing technology companies, right? Whether it be an Intel, whether it be an Antran, whether it be a Cisco, those are kind of the obvious things right off the top of my head. The other people who are going to benefit and have started to benefit are the chemical manufacturers in the United States, and especially because China is beginning to clean up its pollution and for domestic reasons, which has nothing to do with the United States. And as it cleans up its pollution, one of the things it's done is started to clamp down on the chemical industry. So they're going to be another big winner. The U.S. is a low-cost producer globally of chemicals. If we look at some other areas that will probably be winners, the whole defense area is going to be a winner. I think advanced materials are going to be winners here. Homegrown advanced materials will be winners. I think all the homegrown technology around 3D manufacturing is going to be a big winner. You're already seeing winners in people who produce optical fiber here, like Corning. So, I mean, there's a lot of real winners here in the U.S., and I think the winners are going to more than offset the losers. And if people think that, you know, Boeing is a loser because of the trade, Boeing was a loser anyway. And let me explain what I mean. Okay. Boeing is about to be outmoded in China by the local Chinese aerospace company. What China has done through China Aerospace, something called COMAC, that's C-O-M-A-C, is they're trying to build a world-class airplane manufacturer that is indigenous to China, where the whole plane is manufactured in China. Now, they're not there yet, but they have trialed their initial production plane, and it's had three test flights. And oh, by the way, it's got somewhere between 700 and 800 orders for that aircraft, which has not yet been approved. And all those orders are from Chinese carriers. So the minute that plane is ready for prime time, all the orders that are going to Boeing and Airbus for that size plane are going to disappear. And right behind that plane, the Chinese state aerospace company has plans to produce planes so that it won't have to buy any of the other sizes from either Boeing or Airbus or Embraer or Bombardier. So we think that business was going away anyway. We think those people would have been losers, and I think that there's going to be a lot more winners.
Just like China reverse engineers many of the products and then ships out. I think we were talking about that on a previous episode where the Chinese reverse engineer, then rebuild the businesses from the ground up and basically get rid of the outside manufacturers. The same thing is happening to Boeing, you're saying, right now.
Right. So the same thing's happening to Boeing right now, and the same thing they're trying to do to the U.S. semiconductor industry. They're trying to build their own semiconductor industry. In fact, they are expected to start manufacturing, I read an article yesterday, their first DRAM chips. Now, that technology they clearly stole because they don't have any intellectual property there. So their products may be banned from every Western country because they clearly stole the technology from Samsung, Hynix, and Micron Technology. So, but the issue is the Chinese government is basically paying for the fab. So the company that will own the fab will have a zero cost base in the fab. And that's kind of how China works. So the real question is, do you allow a country that doesn't play by the rules to then have access to the end markets with those plants? And I think the answer is going to be no. In fact, the Chinese are petrified of this because they already have sent people to Europe to try to head off what's clearly going to be an American initiative to isolate China on trade.
We're good on that piece, Paul. I do have one other question, more of an opinion or your own observation. Of all the growth, the numbers we see in the economy right now since Trump took over, et cetera, how much of this is due to the tax break effect that we saw coming into play at the turn of the new year? If any.
Okay, so last year's growth had no tax break. So we'll start with 2017. There was no tax break in last year. Okay? I think you're going to get, the estimate is that the tax break will add about 0.5% to economic growth this year. Maximum impact of the tax cuts is slated for 2019 and 2020 in terms of stimulus to the economy. The real question, which remains to be seen, and we've talked about this before, Dan, I call it the carrot and the stick, right? So what the Trump administration did and the Republican Congress did is they cut tax rates to business to 21%, correct?
Right.
And what that did was to bring U.S. business tax rates close to those in places like Germany, where the business tax rate is 15%. So now a company is indifferent between building the plant in the United States or building it in Germany. In fact, if I'm servicing the United States, it makes no sense to build the plant in Germany because I have all this logistics issues getting it over here. So I think what will happen is you're going to get more plant built in the United States because the tax incentive to locate it in Europe has gone away. And in fact, the Europeans are a little bit scared because they built a lot of their economy around exporting and exporting goods to the United States. So I think it's going to be more difficult to follow that policy in the future. And they're not in a position to massively devalue their currency against the dollar without running into massive political headwinds. So I think that when you look at this, I think it was positive for getting more plant and ultimately more growth here. I do think that eventually what will happen is you're going to have a budget deficit and you'll have to put a VAT in place, right, to make up for the tax revenues you're short. But I think the initial thing is to get investment here and to accelerate the growth in the economy, which I do think we will have. And I think we're going to have faster productivity growth. I think one of the problems with the government is their measurement of productivity growth is poor. And the other thing that I think will happen is as real incomes start to go up in the United States, what will happen is labor participation can go up significantly. Now, here's an interesting statistic. Since 2001, labor participation rates in the United States as a percent of the population, employment to population, are down 3 to 4 percentage points in the prime age group of 25 to 54. In Europe, same demographics, labor participation rates are up 3 to 4%. So U.S. labor participation rates are now 7 to 8 percentage points below where they are in Europe. So imagine we get 0.5 percentage point of natural organic demographic growth. Let's imagine we actually allow for some immigration, not under Trump, but maybe under someone else. That adds another 0.5 percentage point, right? All of a sudden we're at 1%. Let's say we get 1 percentage point of increased labor force participation, right? We got 7 points to go. That's 7 years of growth, right? So we're up to 2%. Mm-hmm. Let's say we get 2% productivity growth. It's very easy to imagine that the U.S. could easily grow at 3.5 to 4% for an extended period of time. So when I look at all this stuff, right, and what's going on with the tax rates and everything, I think it's going to probably be a long-term positive. And the carrot and the stick with corporate America comes down to they've been offered the carrot of, right, lower tax rates. And so we'll see if they build plant here, because I think the stick, if they don't do that over the next few years, the stick will come out and you'll see the U.S. put in place more tariffs and will force production back into the U.S. Because there's no reason, for example, that technology goods are made in Vietnam that belong in, that are being sold to the United States. Vietnam has no competitive advantage in technology. So, I mean, I think that that's really what's going on. And corporate America, I think, is making a big mistake short term, because if you look for the S&P 500, for example, they're going to have $2.5 trillion in cash flow. They're only investing in CapEx and R&D, $1 trillion, and then they're taking another $1.5 trillion and using it to buy back stock. So it seems to me they got it backwards. And in fact, we've done the math and shown that if corporate America were to invest, even at lower returns on capital than they are currently producing in their businesses, it would be hugely accretive to earnings per share, and very positive for their shareholders, much more positive than buying back stock. In fact, we did an analysis of a particular large company, we didn't name who it was, and published that within the last 6 months. And what it basically showed is that the company would be earning, instead of something like $7.50 a share, it would be earning closer to $9 a share if it had actually invested the money instead of buying back stock with the money. So I think that we're going to start with the carrot, which is the lower tax rates. And I think eventually, if we don't see change, we're going to get the stick. That's a long-winded answer to your question, Dan.
It's solid. It provides a very different perspective. Our company does, you know, $3 to $4 million in revenue. And so I look at the 21% tax break through that, you know, small amount of millions of dollars in revenue, whereas it makes much more economic sense for the administration to put that into play when it's looked at, you know, in terms of hundreds of millions and billions of dollars in revenue in these companies who are then going to invest some untold amount of several tens of millions of dollars to build these plants here, who no longer have the risks and costs of logistics by building that stuff in Germany or any of the other countries around the world and then shipping it here. So it definitely was a great answer and shed some light on my perspective for sure. The report that you mentioned that you wrote on this large company, is that something that is published where listeners can get a copy or maybe contact your office, or is that available?
Yeah, if they contact our office, I'd be happy to share a copy. But what it basically shows is the shareholders of the company would have been much better off if the company had invested as opposed to buy back billions and billions of dollars of stock. And we even assumed that the ROIC went from something like 30% down to 15%. Shareholders still would have been way better off.
Do you have some contact information for the listeners to get in touch with you?
Sure, they can call our offices at 610-687-7766. And someone at the switchboard will get their information and we'll be in touch with them. Or they can go to our website, which is www.greendrakeadvisors.com. That's Green Drake. That's the word green, Drake, followed by advisors, spelled with an O, advisors.com. And fill out the contact us form and request this report, and we'll be happy to send it to them.
Cool. I appreciate the time, all the information here, Paul. We've come to the end of our episode here. I appreciate you being on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate it, and I look forward to speaking to your listeners next quarter.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Quarterly Market Update REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification when I release the next REI Diamond Show episode? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds and get some cool bonuses, or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Do you have investment capital not already earning above average returns? If you're interested in checking out upcoming private mortgage investment opportunities I have available in Chicago, Atlanta, Florida, or Philadelphia, go to superchargedreturns.com. Most of these private mortgage investment opportunities are short-term, 3 to 6 month deals, often returning capital in as quick as 30 to 60 days. You'll also receive instant access to the audio on how to create tax-free real estate investments. At that website, you can also find links to available investment properties for sale if you are buying. Thanks again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.